Hello and welcome to a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures, the show all about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. We are talking with a true behind-the-scenes filmmaker today. You wouldn't recognize him if you saw him on the streets, but you'd sure know the characters that he's helped bring to life, from the California Raisins to Mr. Peanut to the fantastic Mr. Fox. He's currently collaborating with the great Guillermo del Toro on a stop-motion version of Pinocchio, and we are delighted to have him here in the studio. Mark Gustafson, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
Before we dive into Mark's filmography, I do want to mention that we are currently in the midst of our spring membership drive. So if you've been enjoying the programming this morning, we want to offer you the opportunity to join KBOO and to take home a thank you gift. We have a three-day weekend pass to the upcoming Northwest Animation Festival. This is the biggest animation festival in the country. It takes place right here in Portland. So yes, you can call in right now and enjoy 3 days of award-winning animation on the big screen at the Hollywood Theater. We also have a three-volume set of the Harrow County graphic novels, generously provided by Dark Horse Comics. They collect the first 12 comics in the Harrow County series, so don't wait. Call 877-500-KBOO and become a member of your community radio station. All right. Well, Mark, you are one of the most celebrated stop-motion animators working today. You've won numerous Annie Awards, some call them the Animation Oscars, as well as 3 Primetime Ennies and a Bronze Lion at the Cannes Film Festival. Can you give us a quick rundown of what stop-motion entails for the folks who might not know the term?
Stop-motion is really one of the oldest forms of animation there is. It's very, very simple. As soon as people had cameras, they started doing stop motion, which really involves just putting something in front of the camera, moving it slightly, taking a frame, moving it slightly, taking another frame. That's the most base version. Everything else, is just sort of elaborating on that and perfecting it.
Well, you worked very closely with Wes Anderson on The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Wes was the director, but you were the animation director. So how did that work out, the division of labor?
Well, Wes was new to stop motion, so he brought me on because I had a fair amount of experience doing it, and he wanted someone who sort of understood the ropes. So I was really there to just sort of hold his hand and lead him through the process.
Well, I understand that Wes is a fan of Willis O'Brien, who's the groundbreaking stop-motion animator who brought King Kong to life back in the 30s, really, really early stop-motion. And Wes really liked those bendy arms and legs that those old puppets had. So that was one of the looks you worked into, The Fantastic Mr. Fox. I understand there were actually 3 sizes of puppets.
Yeah. We decided early on that for some of the scenes, we're going to work with extremely small puppets, like literally an inch tall in some cases. And we wanted to do that because we could put them on these giant landscapes, for one thing. But also...
Right, like the whole multi-layered underground landscapes that Wes is so fond of.
Exactly. But it also, when you're animating something that small, there's only so much you can do with it. And he really liked that sort of artificiality of the movement, you know, the restrictions of working with something that small. And, you know, you mentioned Willis O'Brien and, you know, King Kong and those things. He also liked the sort of slight swimminess of the fur that you got. And that's something that we used to call the mystery wind. I always like that term.
I understand that sometimes working with fur on a character that's small, you have to use hair products.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to spray them, and there's all kinds of tricks.
Well, I hope I'm not talking out of school. I heard that the job of animation director was first offered to Henry Selick of Nightmare Before Christmas fame. Henry had created some wacky sea creatures that Wes used in The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
That's true, yeah. And Henry couldn't do it for one reason or another. I think Coraline, he was in development on at that time. So he recommended that Wes speak with me, and the rest is history.
Well, it sounds like you got on really well. I mean, The Fantastic Mr. Fox is really an animated version of Wes's oeuvre with the color sense, the staging, the camera angles, and everything.
Absolutely. Wes is a unique talent, and he has a very specific vision. So it was really our job to make sure that, you know, even though it was an animated film, we wound up with a Wes Anderson film. And well, you know, for me, one of the most interesting things about that was, since he hadn't done stop motion or to any large extent before, he wanted to try things in a different way than you know, the old guard. So he sort of forced us to really approach things differently. And I think that was a healthy thing. You know, that was a good thing. It wound up kind of pushing us out of our comfort zone and into some pretty interesting places.
Yeah, well, you've worked in a lot of commercial animation, so saying yes to the client and finding a way around obstacles is sort of second nature to you. So I'm assuming there was a lot of that, especially because you were in London, he was in Paris, and there's a lot of communication being done by Skype.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of emails. Hundreds of thousands of emails went back and forth. But yeah, Wes was living in Paris at the time, and we were shooting in London, but he would come over, you know, fairly frequently. And certainly he was in touch with us every single day, you know, on every detail.
Now, on the Fantastic Mr. Fox, how early did you come in? Were you helping out with the actors, the voice actors? You had this amazing coterie of actors, Bill Murray, George Clooney, Meryl Streep. And it wasn't done in the normal sort of soundstage or in a glass booth or anything like that. A lot of the voice acting was taking place out of doors in these environments that looked a little bit like the environments you were creating.
Yeah, I think that was something that was really important to Wes, was this notion of capturing the, you know, something very real about the environment. So he wound up recording big chunks of the film, you know, out of doors in fields and on a farm in upstate New York, you know, with Bill Murray running around in the field. And it was a pretty crazy scene. I came actually, you know, the voice recording comes a little bit later in the process. I came in probably about 3 years before the film even went into pre-production, because there's that whole phase of writing the script and trying to get financing, and then everybody's sitting around wondering if it's going to happen, which obviously it eventually did.
You started out working for Will Vint Studios, and they split off. There's a commercial arm of Leica Entertainment that has gone independent now. It's called House Special, and you are a resident director there.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
But you also sometimes get loaned out to Leica Features.
Yeah, I have a project in development with Leica as well, and several other projects sort of scattered around the globe, we'll see what happens.
I understand that Goblins is a feature that's sort of under development at Leica, and Leica is normally known for its family-friendly films with the plucky young heroes and heroines. I understand that Goblins is written a little bit darker, a little bit more adult-themed than some of the earlier films.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I don't mean to speak for Leica, but I think they're starting to stretch their legs a little bit. I think they don't want to necessarily get a pigeonholed as just doing the, you know, pure family, you know, friendly features, but, you know, doing stuff that's a little bit more edgy. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the direction they're moving right now, but I could be wrong.
Can you tell us anything, or just between the two of us, about the new movie?
It has goblins in it.
It has goblins.
Yeah, okay. That's about as much as I can share at this point.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're talking today with Mark Gustafson, animation director at House Special in Portland. Some of the characters that Mark's brought to life include Mr. Peanut, Pinocchio, and the Fantastic Mr. Fox. Portland, you've been in Portland for all your life?
I was born in Portland.
So yeah, you are one of the people who started out here, not one of the people that was drawn here to the burgeoning animation industry.
Yeah, this is my home. I really do love Portland.
So how did you get started before the days of Will Vinton? I mean, you were probably doing 8mm films in your basement or in your yard or whatever?
Yeah. I was in art school and I was studying graphic design and I realized that I wasn't any good at it and I really didn't like doing it. So I started making films instead and I grabbed a 8mm camera and a buddy and, you know, put him in a costume and, you know, ran through the woods and, you know, we threw dummies off the roof of the museum and, you know, did all that stuff that you do when you're just learning the process.
It's funny. Portland was a really active independent film town back in the 70s and 80s, but nobody knew about it. You know, we had Penny Allen, Gus Van Sant, Eric Edwards, Matt Groening was making little films.
Yeah, and you couldn't help but run into all those people. So, because it is a very small community, I got to meet and in many cases work with those people.
So it must have been just the perfect timing when you got hooked up with Will Vinton Studios. And as you said, animators were not making a king's ransom back then at all.
No, and I wasn't an animator when I started. I came on as just a PA, a production assistant. So my job was to sweep the floors and, you know, run to the hardware store and buy stuff and bring it back. And then slowly I sort of wormed my way into the process and started helping build things. Turned out I could sculpt. I didn't know I could sculpt. And then assisted animators. And then when the animators, there weren't enough of them, I began animating shots myself. And then through attrition, I just became a director. Start learning how to animate now.
So one of your commercial projects actually got really popular, and that was the Mr. Peanut series that featured the voice of Robert Downey Jr. That looks like it must have been a lot of fun.
It was fun. We were tasked with sort of updating Mr. Peanut, but still kind of hanging on to that, you know, 100-year tradition of who he was, you know, as a character. So as part of that, they got a new voice. He had never really spoken before. And the first person that voiced him was Robert Downey Jr., who's pretty amazing. I mean, he really brings a lot to the table.
So were you actively involved in developing that character then before you shot the commercials?
Yes, we had to figure out how to bring him into 3D and make him into a puppet and what aspects of him we were going to modernize and what aspects we were going to sort of hang on to, you know, from the classic Mr. Peanut. Because, you know, he's a bit of a dandy, you know, and there's something fun about that. And we didn't want to just sort of abandon it and, you know, put him on a skateboard and, you know, make him hip, quote unquote. So
now you made him unflappable, really, I think.
Yes. Well, you have to be unflappable if you're a peanut.
You're responsible for the 1994 animated short Mr. Resistor, which was sort of an after-hours project at Will Vinton Studios.
Yeah, it was. At the time, we did mostly clay, you know, claymation
right.
stuff. So that film was a chance for me to sort of step out on my own and try something with different materials and tell a story that I wanted to tell. Because up until that point, I was basically an animator, an employee of the studio. So I wanted to say, okay, if I was going to tell a story, it would be this. And that turned out to be Mr. Resistor, which was essentially a documentary about a character that only lived for 5 minutes.
You use a lot of industrial materials, and it's got this landscape that looks like a workbench, and it's
it
all
was
dusty.
A workbench.
it was an actual workbench. Good practical photography there. But it really reminded me of a lot of Soviet-era Czech animation, Jan Svankmajer and folks like that, that had sort of these dark, dreary environments with industrial detritus around.
Yeah, that was definitely part of my inspiration for that. And the beauty of working with those materials is they're just laying around. So I would just go out into the workshop, the garage, and I would find whatever was laying around and build a set out of it. And, you know, in one case, I found a dead mouse. And I thought, well, why not? So I brought it in, set it up, and shot a scene very quickly before the maggots took him away.
Wow, inspiration from the environment.
Absolutely.
And then Mr. Resistor himself, he builds a vehicle out of all the parts that are lying around. So
yeah, a mousetrap and such, yeah.
That short proved popular enough that you were tapped to direct a sequel, Bride of Resistor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the next step was love, you know. I guess it's all of our eternal searches for love. And I thought, even though he's made of discarded parts, he should find someone.
Well, it's obviously a callback to Frankenstein, because Frankenstein's monster is basically parts.
Yeah, absolutely. For his parts. It is.
Well, let's talk about Guillermo del Toro. He's become a legendary name in the cinema of horror and fantasy. Hellboy and The Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth are some of his films. He always works in some fascinating drama and mythological things, sometimes politics. So you have been talking with Guillermo for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I spent a fair amount of time with him developing this Pinocchio project, which we'll see if it moves forward.
I imagine that his take on Pinocchio is going to be radically different from the Disney classic.
It is. It's really going back to the source material.
Collodi?
Much more closely.
In the days of Commedia dell'arte in mm-hmm. Renaissance Italy. So it was a satire originally, Pinocchio, wasn't it?
Yeah, very dark satire, mm-hmm. yes. And it had a political message, depending on who you talk to. Some people said yes, some people said no. But yeah, the version that Guillermo's interested in doing is quite dark. Also very funny, though, and surprising. I mean, he's a brilliant filmmaker, obviously, and very, very passionate about the work. And he loves stop motion. So I think he really would love the opportunity to bring this version of Pinocchio to life.
Yeah, he's obviously worked with a lot of what's called wet work. It's the great old special effects that aren't computer generated. They're costumes and a lot of latex. And so I can see that stop motion would be a good next step for him.
Yeah, he's also basically a film geek. Uh-huh. You know, like he collects film memorabilia and props and whatnot pretty extensively. I've been to his house where his collection is, and he has a house that is dedicated to that collection. His wife said, no, you're not going to have this stuff in the house. So he said, okay, I'll buy another house. And he has the most amazing collection of stuff going back to Willis O'Brien and, you know, he's
Ray
got
Harryhausen,
one of the,
I'm
Ray
sure.
Harryhausen, right. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I think all of our listeners are going to be very envious that you got to stroll through the house of Guillermo del Toro. It's so legendary.
It was a privilege. Yeah, he's even got a room. He's got a little library where he can make it rain and thunder in there. And he has a bookshelf that literally is a secret passage to another room.
So how did you and Guillermo get hooked up? Did he call you? Did somebody introduce you?
Yeah, he just called me out of the blue.
Wow.
I don't know exactly, you know, where he got my name. It might have been through Fantastic Mr. Fox, but yeah, just called up and said, hey, this is Guillermo. I want to do this version of Pinocchio. Would you be interested in helping me out?
Wow. Well, what can you tell us? I mean, I'm sure it's not nailed down yet, but what can you tell us about the ideas that you threw back and forth about Pinocchio?
Well, as I said, it's sort of going back to the original source material, you know, much, much more. And we've sort of moved the setting. It's sort of time-wise, it takes place between World War I and World War II. So it's this sort of, I think it's a pretty charged time where the world is sort of still in shock from the first war. And, you know, now fascism, you know, is rising again.
Yeah, the Weimar Republic in Germany.
Yeah, and I think that fascism is something that Guillermo is really interested in.
Oh, obviously Pan's Labyrinth touches really hugely on Franco's Spain.
Yeah, so it makes for a pretty rich material to work with, and the setting becomes much more interesting with, you know, the remnants of the previous war and the, you know, the build up to the next one coming.
Well, do you have any personal projects that you're excited about that are coming up on the horizon?
I've got a number of things, I say, in development. We'll see which one comes to fruition. But, you know, the nature of the business is you have to be kind of moving forward on a number of fronts because, you know, the things, feature films in particular, are so expensive. You never know what's going to happen. You know, it takes a lot of convincing to have someone pony up, you know, the many millions of dollars it takes to do this stuff. Even though, you know, I'm only asking for a measly, you know, $40 million. You know, that's a low budget film these days.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. But still, you know, that's a lot of money.
So you're really at the top of the game now. Are you mentoring some folks that are coming up? Are there programs within Leica and within House Special where folks get brought in, young people get brought in, showing the ropes?
Well, I appreciate you saying I'm at the top of the game. I like to think I'm at the top of the middle of the game.
Ah.
And that's room to grow. But yes, we do bring in apprentices and mentor them. And that's a really satisfying part of the job, is to see, you know, young people come in with lots of energy and talent and make it look easy sometimes.
Well, Mark, we've run out of time, but if you can stick around and chat for a few more minutes, we'd love to find out some more about your other projects and maybe some inside dope about what's coming up.
All right. We'll see what I can do.
Great. We'll put that extra audio up on the KABU website a little later today for our listeners to access. The Words and Pictures archive page can be found at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. Thanks to everybody who's called in during Words and Pictures today and started or renewed their membership with KABU. Once again, you can still become a member. We have a 3-day weekend pass to the Northwest Animation Fest, and we have a fabulous set of graphic novels that can be delivered to your door. They're a great gift for moms, dads, and grads. And my friends out in Studio One are joining me right now. They've got all the details. Hello, how's it been going out there today?
Well, hey, Concert, it is going very well. We are excited to be with you on this, the first day of our spring membership drive. I'm Ani, I'm losing my voice. There it happens, just like that. We are so excited that you are listening to Words and Pictures here on KABU Community Radio. That was a great interview with Mark Gustafson. And we want to, right now, ask for your support at 877-500-5266. This is the first day of our spring membership drive, and we are looking to raise $350 for this program. SW Concert is an animator himself. He is an illustrator graphic person. There he draws. That's what I'm trying to say. He draws. And I love the insight that he brings to the interviews that he does for Words and Pictures, whether he's speaking with animators like Mark Gustafson, or whether he's speaking with the creators of Haro County, which he spoke with, oh gosh, in February. That is a 3-volume graphic novel series. You know, whether you know, whoever he's speaking to, he brings this sort of inside view of the art, of the medium, and he translates that into the airwaves so that we can all sort of benefit, and we share culture, and we do this thing here on KABU in a grassroots supported independent media kind of way. And that's where you come in, my friend. Please call us right now. And with your contribution of $6.25 a month, that's right, just $6.25 a month, it comes out to $75 in the course of a year, you can get those tickets to the Northwest Animation Festival. And that is, all around town, various venues. Check the website for Northwest Animation Festival, but give us a call at 877-500-5266 and let us know that you're there and that you want to support KBOO Community Radio, and you are there to support Words and Pictures specifically because you know sharing culture is super important. It keeps us inspired. It keeps us together. It keeps us going as we, well, make the world a better place, a place full of art, a place full of beauty, a place full of truth. That's what we do here at KBOO, and you are a very, very important part of that equation. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to join us. Jump on in to the KBOO community right now.
I see one of the aspects of KBOO Portland is to occasionally and sometimes unexpectedly spread a little joy. And I get joy from reading graphic novels. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The number to call is 877-500-5266. And the reason I brought up graphic novels is because I happen to have read one that that the inimitable Conch, S.W. Conser, has talked to the author of. How's that for a convoluted sentence? And it's Harrow County by Tyler Crook and Cullen Bunn, and it's really fun. It's Harrow County is Dark Horse, acclaimed new gothic horror comic series from the writer and artist team of Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook. It's set in North Carolina in the last century, and the story follows the mysterious forces that haunt a rural agricultural community and possibly a much broader landscape. It's one of those, you know, spooky horror novels that I just so enjoy. At the center of it all is teenager Emmy Crawford, whose awareness of her strange powers is only just beginning, and there's a Sci-Fi Channel television series currently in development. And it will join The Witch and Stranger Things in updating the genre of Americana supernatural fiction. So this is a thing that is just about to happen. You can get in on it by calling us at KBOO at 877-500-5266 for a $90 annual pledge, which is what,
760-something.
Thank you. Something like that, 877-500-5266. Now, this is one of those things that just pops up all of a sudden, and then you hear about it later. But you can have your own Harrow County before it goes onto the television. I can just pretty much guarantee you're going to enjoy it. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Now, lucky you, you've been wondering when to call in. You just got free and you have access to a phone right now, and so you're able to call in. And of course, you want to support what we do at KBOO and have some fun with it. Yeah, 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266.
And you know that Northwest Animation Festival is going on right now. Started yesterday, goes through this weekend, and you can get, that's right, you can get a pass to the Animation Festival. It is, actually, it's a single ticket for your $75 contribution. Please do give us a call right now and join us. Join KBOO and support yourself. Not only are you making sure that community radio stays strong and vibrant and you are a part of this legacy, but you can also get a ticket to the Northwest Animation Festival. Again, going on even as we speak. Well, okay, the showing's actually starting at 7 o'clock tonight, but you want to be there. You want to be involved. You want to see the great creative offerings that exist, and we can help get you connected to that. 877-500-5266, or online. You can also contribute at kboo.fm. Click on the donate button, and you are there. It is an easy thing to do, but it is a meaningful thing to do. And we ask that you stop for just a moment and do it right now to support KBOO's independent independence, really, to allow that independence to continue and to, in fact, well, know that you are backing actually this community radio resource, which also provides free training to community members that want to be the media, to community members that want to add their passion, their expertise, their knowledge to the airwaves, and be that in political analysis, investigative reporting, going out and making sure we catch lectures and readings when they happen around town, doing the audio production work, or maybe actually sharing in radio theater or sharing their musical knowledge, as DJ Charlie is about to do as he's coming on up with World Beat Connection in just a moment. But please, right now, help us raise that $350 for Words and Pictures and SW Concert's interview of Mark Gustafson this morning, a fantastic animator. and animation director. Please do call right now with your generous support and help KABU reach its overall spring drive goal and reach that $350 that we are looking for Words and Pictures this morning. Won't you be the person right now that makes the call to join KABU Community Radio? Add your independence with ours. We are interdependent. We are strong. We create culture. We are a force of truth and beauty and joy in this world, and you are a part of it. Please join us right now with your financial support and allow us to continue this legacy with your strength. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.